pictures up here on the board. Did you finish this? Both of you? Outstanding. But I'm not for sure we made notice that two of my favorite pictures up here we want to bring notice of. This one right here is Kelly. How old were you? But look at that smile. He was already, I mean, that was him. And then, we've got marriage counseling going now. Kelly gave me this one of Nisa. How old are you, Nisa?
About 3 or 4.
3 or 4 years old. So let's pray for Kelly and Nisa. Well, pray for Kelly. But I thought, well, I don't want people to look at that and not see that that's Nisa. All right? All right, you got your Bibles? Go to Psalm 127. Psalm 127. We continue our reading and discussing of the blessings that God has given us through our children and our responsibility for our children. And that'll take us, if God gives us a normal time frame for anything, we'll keep going that way for the next few weeks. All right. Here's how we started. We breathe out so we can breathe in. Tell me first, when your children were born, when your grandchildren were born, and for some of us, when your great-grandchildren were born, what thoughts did you have? What prayers did you offer? What promises did you make? What happened to you when your children were born? At that moment, what did you think? What did you feel? What did you promise? What did you pray? What'd you think? What'd you pray?
I would say that I got a lot more worried because this world is terrifying and I can't protect them all the time. So my prayer is that God surrounds them with Him and people will follow Him and lead them to Him, because that's the only thing that's going to keep them safe and really scary.
Well said. Well said. What'd you hear? What'd you think? What'd you feel? What'd you say? What'd you promise? What'd you pray?
I was too old to remember my own kids much, but I was present at the birth of all three of my grandchildren. And I just remember it was such an overwhelming awesomeness, you know, and thankfulness to God and His miracles, you know, what he does. And
Philip. There's been times I've thought of kids in torture in the same sentence. Sometimes it's what I wanted to do to them. Yes, Gary.
Something that prayed even before any of my children or grandchildren were born, that I knew they were coming, is that God would already be at work raising up, you know, for my son, a young lady, who would be, you know, my partner, my little bride, the same as me.
Yeah.
It's a blessing. We've been blessed with our oldest son and our younger son being married in about 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
It's 3 weeks. And my prayer went in for twice.
I don't remember now when that thought occurred to me. It was not something I grew up with. It wasn't something I heard growing up. It was after I'd gotten older and had kids, and don't remember who introduced me to the thought, but somebody asked in a meeting something like this. Somebody said, "Are you praying already for your children's mates that God will be working in the world to work to bring them someone suitable to them and that will help them go to heaven?" And I had never had that thought, and I'm not for sure all of, so if we haven't had that thought, that's a thought worth having, and it's a prayer worth praying. That we begin to pray even for the youngest, and it's not too late to be praying for the oldest. Let's be praying that God will bring someone into their life that will bless them. This guy kept saying it this way, help them go to heaven. Makes sense to me, right? It had to be because of the Bible influence in my life and the Bible teaching that my mother did all early those years. It was just automatic for me when my children were being born and then when my grandchildren started being born that I prayed. And it was that prayer without understanding all the vows. It must have been a part of Hannah's prayer. When she was praying for a child, she said, "Lord, you know, you give me this child, then I'll give him back to you." I prayed that same kind of prayer. Of course, I'm sure I didn't understand all that was involved in her commitment to that. But I wanted that same thing to be true, that God give us a healthy baby, a safe delivery, and God, I will give that child back to you. My intent, of course, was to make sure that I lived the right kind of example or I taught the right kinds of things, made sure they had the right kind of association, do all that I could within my power to do to give them back to the Lord. You know so many of my failures and you know my even my children's struggles, but that's still my prayer that God will continue to help me give them back to Him. I think some of you know, I tried to get texts out to as many people as I could. On Friday, my oldest grandson, William, and I sat down with my youngest grandson, Titus, and had a Bible study. Titus had some questions about things. And about 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, we heard Titus confess his faith in Jesus, and we buried him in Jesus and raised him to walk in that new life. That's just the beginning of his new life now. And I want to spend the rest of my life making sure I leave him the right kind of example and the right kind of teaching to help him make it all the way home. Psalms 27 says it this way. Verse 3, sons are a heritage from the Lord. That word heritage is an inheritance. The word sons there is accurate. It's the word sons. Well, aren't daughters a heritage? Yes, but in this culture, what you've got to understand, think in terms, in a world before Social Security, in a world before WIC, in a world before welfare, in a world before any of those government-type programs, what did a son mean? It was somebody that would be able to provide for you in your old age. That was the understanding here. So sons were a heritage of the Lord. In other words, they were your inheritance. They're your retirement plan. That's the way it was intended. Sons are a heritage of the Lord. But look at the next phrase. It's just as accurate. And children are a reward from Him. Now, we live in a world, and it's one of those challenges that those of us who have faith, we struggle with. We struggle with on several levels. We have families here who want children and crave to have children and receive this kind of blessing, this kind of reward. And that's delayed for them. And that's stressful for them. And yet then there's others that have no concerns at all. They don't have any intention of raising the children in the Lord. They have no intention of teaching them right from wrong. They have no intention even of taking care of them. They just bingo, bango, bongo, babies just pop out. We live in that culture. We live in that world, and it is frustrating. It's challenging. It's mind-boggling sometimes. What has God got in mind? I would not presume to talk about what's in God's mind, but I know this is true. Children are a reward. God's trying to bless that family, whoever it is. God has an intention there for them. Now, do they accept that intention? Many of them don't. And shame on them. And that will be one day they'll have to hold, God will hold them responsible for the lack of responsibility they've had. But the truth is still the same. Children are meant to be a reward. Now, here's where we're going to study. Look at verse 4. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are sons born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. All right, I want you to go back to the illustration. Arrows in the hands of a warrior. Now, because it's an illustration, it gives us some leeway in our discussion. Doesn't mean that everything we discussed is going to be accurate, but there are some things about arrows that would help us maybe in learning the blessing of our children and the responsibilities we have toward our children. What do arrows represent to the warrior? First of all, what do arrows represent to the warrior? Why? We don't live in that world. We don't live in that culture, so this one's going to be tough. What's the difference between an arrow and any other weapon? Skill? Distance? What's the difference between an arrow and any other weapon? John? What? All right. Weapon difference between arrows and any other weapon. All right. Excellent point. A shield or a sword, where did you fight? Right, close up. And it, for much of that, was to defend. You were defending yourself. You're defending your property. You were trying to win your battle where you stood. What does an arrow do? It extends the battle to a place you can't be. It takes your fight somewhere you can't go. Now, do you see ideas start popping? Because children are like arrows. We're blessed if our quiver is full. So, and there is some blessing, some reward that we have these children, but there must be some purpose behind that I'm not for sure I always saw. So let's take the word arrow and just do some discussion. What's the first thing you'd have to do with an arrow? Think their culture. They couldn't go down here to academy. They couldn't go to one of those outdoor places. What's the first thing? You got to make it. You got to prepare the thing. All right, now what do you look for first? You look for a limb or a tree as straight, unknotted, unbent as you could find it, right? And then what do? You got to strip all the bark off. You got to take all the limbs off. You got to smooth it down. You got to make it straight. See the point? Same would apply to children, wouldn't it? If our children were given to us by God as our heritage, or if they're given to us as a reward, it's meant to benefit us some way. And it's not just financially, because I'm still waiting for that one. It's not just mentioned. It is meant for those of us who fight the good fight of faith. There's lots more application here. But the first thing we have to do is prepare them, y'all. We have to prepare them. Now, here's where the discussion gets specific to what you know to be true already from the Bible. How do you prepare children for battle? How do you prepare children for battle, especially battle that's going to be in places or in times that you cannot be. You teach them how to fight. You teach, and we learned that from Judges, remember? We teach them how to fight. Now, real quick, we don't want to go over the whole thing, but tell me one fight your children need to learn to fight.
That life's not fair.
Yeah, quit being a victim. Life's not fair, so I'm just going to give up. No, 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 no. Of course life is not fair. But Almighty God is. And life may not be fair, but you can be. And so we've got to teach them to fight that fight. Give me another thing. A fight that you know they have to learn. And you don't have to get real big on this one to know.
I would want to teach them that, first of all, the fight is there, but to fight against the devil's schemes.
How many of us have taught our children and our grandchildren the fundamental truth that the devil is a liar? And that there are things out there that are dishonest. And there are things out there that are deceptive. Give me an example of something in your children's world. In your children's world, give me an example of something that's deceptive. Something that's a lie that comes surely from the devil. We just don't see his horns or feel his brimstone breath. The drug culture. The drug culture. And I'm thinking television, the alcohol culture. What does alcohol look like on TV? Just take beer commercials. Just take beer commercials. What do beer commercials look like?
With the guy that drew a blank with the most amazing man in the world or whatever, yeah. You know, and he does all these amazing things and all that, and he drinks this kind of beer.
Yeah. And we laugh at it, but what do our kids do? If we don't tell them about the lie, they might not understand it's a lie. Give me another one. Give me one more example. Just the music industry. Oh, and we tell our kids will tell you. You'll say, ooh, I don't want you listening to that kind of music. And your kids will say, listen, it doesn't matter. What I listen to doesn't change who I am. That's a lie. Yes, it's a lie. It does change. How do I know that? Well, don't just be a fuddy-duddy. Don't just be an old fuddy-duddy and say, well, my music in my world was better than yours. And the truth is, the music that I grew up with is much better than the music you grew up with. And I told my kids, we had this discussion the other day with my kids, and they were talking, and I said, I'm telling you what. I'm going to guarantee you, when your kids come along, they're going to be listening to something that's going to make the stuff you're listening to their version of elevator music. I said, now, I am not getting an elevator that plays that stuff, but I'm telling you, every generation's going to change. But where is the truth in that about music? There is music that produces an anger. I watch it with my criminal guys all the time. When I let them listen to music, I'll say, tell me what you're feeling. Tell me what that music does for you. And if they're honest enough, they'll say, well, that one kind of makes me angry because it's a venting, it's a rage kind of thing. Well, you got to be careful of that. I'm thinking about from the Bible side of it. Let me just go ahead and give you go ahead, Lisa. And over again. Proverbs 4:23, folks, write it down. Remember it. You know it. Guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. My old Bible said, for out of it come the issues of life. Before anything ever comes out of your mouth, before anything ever takes place with your hands or your feet, your body, where is it first? It's in your heart. So you've got to be careful about what you let into your heart. That's a battle we've got to teach them to fight. We got to teach them to fight against the drug culture. We got to teach them to fight against the music, that evil music. We got to teach them to also fight just for themselves, y'all. The undeserved curse of Proverbs 26, I wish, boy, I want us to teach our children that. Teach our children, when somebody says something to you that is not right, you have a right to shoo that bird away. You have the right, in fact, not just the right, you've got the responsibility. You don't let the bird nest in your hair. You don't let that curse nest in your heart. And you got it better. You start teaching them earlier, what'll happen? What'll happen? That some little kid will say something at school and your little girl or your little boy will take it to heart, and before long there'll be eggs and there'll be some hatchlings, and then that a whole bunch, a flock of birds right rooted in that. How many of you can remember? How many of you can remember something that your one of your parents said to you, or something that a sibling said to you, or something that a teacher said to you, or something that a coach or a friend at school or an enemy at school said to you, and it still haunts you to this day? We didn't know how to fight that stuff. We got to teach our kids to fight. So if we're going to prepare them, one of the things we got to do is prepare them to fight. We've got to make sure they are ready for their purpose. Isn't that what an arrow is for? An arrow is intended to fight. We prepare our children for that. Now, the other thing I was going to mention there, and I thought it would come from you first, but that discussion was a worthy one, is you've got to take anything that's a distraction away. You've got to pull the limb off. You've got to get the leaf off. Anything that will change the trajectory of that arrow, you've got to take off. Jesus will say it in Hebrews 12 this way, you put off anything that entangles you. What do we need to teach our children? Some friends are toxic. Some friends are bad. They're bad distractions. Give me another one. What do we need to teach our children?
We always say, follow your heart, follow your desires and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you saw how I reacted. I hear parents say, little honey, you follow your heart. Where does following your heart get you? Big time, right? Big time. Following your heart. That's what Disney told us, and I love Disney stuff, but if you listen to it like you're preparing children for war, for battle, it's very destructive, deceptive.
Making them sissies.
What? Anybody want to say amen? That's right on. And I'm glad somebody said it besides me, because I would say it and get in trouble. We're raising our children to be sissies. I was watching. It was so fun. I don't know what part of this was fun. I've had people in my house for 17 years now. No longer than that. Anyway, they all came in for Thanksgiving, and they're still there. So I'm beginning to forget what Thanksgiving means. And so, but yesterday, instead of watching a football game, I was busy, and I was doing stuff. I think I was cooking breakfast for everybody in the house. But instead of having the football game on, they were watching the Disney Channel and watching one of these Disney little children or teenage, preteen soap operas. It was such a fun thing. They were going back and forth. They were having one of their little dramas. I walked over and said, hold it. Hold it. If any one of my children or grandchildren ever acts like that kid, I will come find you. Because that's exactly what he was talking about. Is let people hurt their feelings. And because people hurt their feelings, that meant it was their fault. No. We got to teach our children not to be distracted by those kind of things. I'm not an example of this. I'm not an example of any of this except what not to do. But I watch us with our children. Are we teaching our children how to save money? Are we teaching our children how to control their appetites? I watch us with our children. And you know, I'm not getting on to you. We got plenty of money for donuts, but I watch our children stack up 3 and 4 and 5 donuts. I understand they're hungry. I understand they're hungry. But are we helping our children by not teaching them to not let things like appetite become more important than politeness or sobriety? Does that make sense? We got to prepare them, okay? Now, there's lots of discussion there. It ought to take place at home. It ought to take place between mom and daddy, brother and sister, aunts, uncles, grandmas, grandpas. Let's have this discussion. Our children need to be prepared for war because they are arrows. Folks, arrows are not meant to be mounted on the wall and to be adored. Arrows were meant to fight and to take the fight in places we couldn't go. Second of all, you know what you got to do with an arrow once it's prepared? You got to aim it, set it. You got to pull it out of the bow, out of the quiver, put it in your bow, pull back. And I took some archery one time, was never able to hit anything except the ground. But you hook your thumb around your cheekbone like that to hold it. And then you know what you do? You've got to aim it. You've got to keep this arm locked and it becomes your sight. And you aim that arrow. What do you want your children, and I just give you just a minute to do this. Where do you want your children to go? What do you want your children to become? What do you want your children to do? I'll open it up that wide. And I took heaven already, so no, you can't tell me you go to heaven. Excellent. And there's a book called Hurried Child or Unhurried Child? Hurried Child. It's a scary book about how we're pushing. That was written 100 years ago, and it's not even anything like what it is now. But you want our but is there a trap also in what was said? And I understand. I want them to stay small for it. There's a trap there because you really don't want them to stay. What you want them to do is when it's time, you want them to make that transition. Guess how they do that, y'all? You have to aim them. They have to be knowing ahead of time, but when I finally let you go, honey, you're going to go this direction. You're going to do that, son. What do you want them to be? Where do you want them to go? What do you want them to do? I'll ask it anyway. Excellent point. Ought to be repeated to all of our kids. Ought to be repeated to all of our grandkids and great-grandkids. Do whatever you want to do. Do whatever you can do. But always find a way to find that offered to the glory and the purpose of God. Okay.
All right. At the risk of sounding too big church in Proverbs 22:6, it says, teach the youth about the way he should go. I've understood what this is really talking about. It's really talking about taking a child and steering them in a way that fits them. In other words, you don't teach them and then they're supposed to go that way and no ands, ifs, or buts, because we all know that's not true, which would then make this be a false statement. Yeah. It's really more, you help a child identify where his or her passions are, help prepare them to be able to cultivate that love and that skill that goes with that. And then, you know, along with what Lacey just said, that's to me the essence of really preparing a child to be able to go out in the world and make a difference.
Excellent. Remember last week when we covered that verse, it was that thought. We take what that child is. All our children are going to be different, right? Same mama, remember we talked about that? Same mama, same daddy. Same church, same Bible classes, same everything. And then they grow up different. You take that child, and being fair doesn't mean that you treat them all alike. Being fair, and remember we talked about if you're going to really be parents, you're going to make it, what did you call it last week? It's not, Bart, do you remember? Bart said it's not for the faint-hearted. Because you got to get serious. You got to put on your big boy pants if you're going to be a daddy and decide, I am going that kid, I've got to get to know that kid. I'm going to get my PhD in that kid and help that kid become the best he can be. I'm going to train him in the way he should go. And this idea here that we're going to send them to war. We're going to send them to battle. We're going to send them to honor God and to help other people. But we have to aim them. And I watch what happened here. Just what happened in this room. What does Kelly do for a living? What he saw his dad doing. Right? And I started thinking of all the people I know where that's happened. So how do you aim a child? You expose them to things you know. If you want your child to have a different life than you, you show them that different life. This is an illustration of how exactly it works. And there's lots of examples to this. Not only just what you do for a living, it's how you live your life. How you serve the Lord. Lynn and Celia did an excellent job of aiming Kelly. But the point is, we start thinking now, okay, now what do I do to aim? What do I do to aim this child? What do I do to aim this girl, this boy? You start thinking about the things you're to expose them to. The greatest baseball player of my life when I was a kid was Mickey Mantle. And I wanted to know everything there was to know about Mickey Mantle. I read every book there was to read still. Anytime there's anything on TV or I read it. Because he was that superstar when I was a kid. His dad put a baseball in his crib. And they made a big deal about how that dad wanted him to be a big league player. And he raised him that way. I wish that dad had taught him some other things after reading his life. I think he would have said the same thing. But I watch us do it with our kids in sports. We'll get our kids involved in sports, folks. And I don't know, do we have some kind of view of grandeur? And one of these days this kid's going to play in the NBA or the NFL or the Major League Baseball. I watch us pour money and time and effort to make them become an athlete. Sometimes when they got absolutely no athletic ability at all. Okay, that's not the point. The point is, do you want them to be servants of God? Do you want them to be Bible class teachers? Do you want them to be generous with their money? Do you want them to be good husbands? Do you want them to be good wives? Do you want them to be loyal employees? Do you want them to be creative bosses? Do you want them to be honorable men and women? You have to aim them. You've got to expose them to that. Right? That's how you aim them. You've got to expose them. You've got to let them have a taste of that. You've got to let them try that. You've got to let them get into that. Dennis and Teresa have 4 children. Valerie went to the mission field. Rex is on the mission field. Abby's getting ready to go to the mission field. Why do you think that happened? Now, is that better than what Kelly's doing? No. Don't misunderstand the point. It's what they were exposed to, right? So you expose your children to those things. So they will have that opportunity. They get that possibility in their head. All right, last thing. You prepare the arrow. You aim the arrow. And I loved what Lacey's parents did with it. it's really the whole idea of raising your children to glorify God, that whatever they choose to do, they're going to glorify God. 1 Corinthians 10, that whatever they do, do all to the glory of God. But the last one is, and this is going to be the by far the hardest one on us, and it's the lesson that I think many of us need to learn more than any of the others. Before an arrow can do what an arrow was intended to do, you got to let it go. Before a child can become what a child in God intended that child to become, what do you got to do? You got to let it go. Now, we understand that when it comes to walking. What do you finally have to do? Let go of the hand and let them wobble and fall and wobble and fall until they get it right. We understand that when it comes to riding a bicycle. What do we have to do? At some point, we got to take off the training wheels. If we're ever going to let it, we can't run beside them for the rest of their life. They don't want us to, be real honest. That's why they're trying to pedal fast. All right. When they go to school the first time, mamas just bawl, "Oh, my baby's going into school," and I understand. I think I had a few tears myself. But you've got to let them go, y'all. When they're driving a car, you got to let them go. When they go to college, you got to let them go. When they get married, you got to let them go. Are you hearing what I'm saying? You've got to let them go. Now, so if they're going to be prepared to finally leave the quiver, leave the bow, if they're going to be ready when they leave the nest to become what God intended them to be, what had you better taught them before they leave? All those things they're going to need to know before they leave. Bob and I used to work with the AIM program here in Lubbock. We'd get phone calls from parents. Kids are coming to us to be trained to be sent to the mission field. And mamas would call us and said, "Could you take my son to the store and buy him some sheets and buy his toothpaste and buy his soap and buy his toilet paper to help him set up his apartment? Because we weren't able to do that. Would you buy it? And then send us a bill and we'll reimburse you." And I would say, "No. Because if he wants toilet paper, he can find it. If he wants toothpaste, we'll make him buy that. If he wants, he has to do that." Mamas, quit crippling your babies. You got to teach them how to do some stuff, right? That means they're going to have to learn to do it before you let them go. Dads, you got to get that boy taught before you turn him loose, or he won't know what to do. So that means you've got to start letting go a little bit at a time. A little bit at a time before you finally have to let them go completely. Now, some of us have made some mistakes. Some of us have held on too tight. Some of us didn't prepare them. Lots of things we didn't do. But the truth is, God is still the God of our children. And if we didn't do it right, He will. We aren't able to take care of them, He will. So let's put in our resolve, as parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles, nieces, brothers and sisters, babysitters, Bible class teachers, we're going to prepare them, we're going to aim them, and then we let them go.